This is another episode of the Welcome To podcast brought to you by the Land Information Access Association out of Traverse City, Michigan, bringing you innovative solutions for sustainable communities. I'm your host, community planner Zach Vega. Be sure to follow Welcome To on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the Stitcher app, or however else you get your audio content, and go to liaa.org to see what else our nonprofit is working on. Hey, everybody who listens to this podcast for some reason. Really excited. I just got back from Detroit, drove all the way back up to Traverse City last night, but not before I had a lot of fun, went to a concert, and then I got to talk to people in the planning profession, which is what it's all about. So first, for this episode, we're going to be talking to Matt Williams with the City of Detroit. He's a planner, designer, and he led a planning process that was child-centric in the Cody Rouge and Warrendale neighborhoods in the City of Detroit. So that was really exciting. Heard his presentation at the Michigan Association of Planning Conference, and I thought a lot of other people, especially in larger cities, but really anywhere, need to consider the benefits of using this approach and focusing on the needs of children, because if you're a planner, you are probably aware of the old adage that if we plan for children and the elderly, then we plan for everybody. So this was a really cool planning process, and I'm really excited to talk about it today. Also on the way home, got to talk to Robert Gibbs of Gibbs Planning Group, named one of the top 7 urbanists of all time by Plan Edison. So that was a really exciting discussion. I had never been to Birmingham, Michigan before, and it's a new urbanist dream. So if you're a planning nerd like me and you want to see some of the great new urbanist developments, Michigan is chock full of them. So come visit. But you know, yeah, come visit. Come check out what Michigan's got. We've got a lot of stuff to offer. Anyways, I hope you guys enjoy the episode today with Matt. If you have any, as always, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to email me at zvega@liaa.org and enjoy the episode. Thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate it wherever you are. I still don't know why anyone listens to us, but hey, enjoy. Thank you. Got it. Okay. All right, Matt, good to meet you. Saw your presentation at the MAP conference, Michigan Association Planning Conference, on the child-centric planning project that you guys did. Yeah. Something that I don't think a lot of people consider, interestingly, they don't think about kids in these neighborhoods and how the built environment affects their lives. So what got you guys thinking? So I guess, do you want to introduce yourself first?
Sure.
Okay. I dive right into it. So no, yeah, go ahead.
No sweat. My name is Matt Williams. I'm a native Detroiter, and I am the project manager working at the City of Detroit Planning and Development Department on the Warrendale Cody Rouge Neighborhood Framework Plan. And ours is, to your point, Zach, a child-centric planning process.
Okay. And how did that get started in terms of what need were you noticing?
Sure. So, as you know, the City of Detroit is underway with a number of neighborhood framework plans, and so ours is one of 10. And I think they're all in various stages. Some have been realized and had projects implemented already. Others are just underway in the planning process and starting community meetings. And ours is just towards the end of the planning process. But to your question, its origins are a little different from other strategic neighborhood framework plans, which are typically funded through the city's general funds. Ours was, and this harkens back to the day when Maurice Cox was our planning director, sort of a collaboration between a number of different corporate and philanthropic agencies that were already working in the Cody Rouge neighborhood, to be specific. And when the planning department identified Warrendale and Cody Rouge as potential areas to do a neighborhood framework plan in, the work of those entities guided us toward a child-centric plan. Namely, the Skillman Foundation is a very large philanthropic organization whose interest is education and youth to the most part. And so their partnership helped steer this plan towards the focus that There are 12,000 plus young people who live in the Warrendale and Cody Rouge neighborhood.
And what's the general size?
36,000-ish people. Okay. So a third of the population are young people. And that's the second largest population of young people in the entire city, second to the Southwest neighborhood, I do believe.
Okay.
And so the idea that we would focus on youth and the outcomes being geared towards all of the different facilities or programs that a young person might need from cradle to career. And so ultimately, the built environment is an environment that people of all ages and creeds should be able to access and have what they need to have successful lives. But we felt like focusing on specifically engaging young people in this process was a major opportunity for this plan. So far, it's been, I think, a really novel and progressive approach. It's required a lot more work. Obviously, anytime you're doing something new or for the first time, it takes a little more time, and there are unknowns. So
yeah, did you base this planning process off of sort of a case study that you saw in a different city, or did you just work with your team to sort of figure something out?
That's a great question. Both and. Mm-hmm. And so I think, so let me go back to, again, some of the origin. The planning and development department in fall of 2018 had an RFP process and decided upon Hector Design Services. Hector is a urban planning firm based out of New Jersey, and its two principal partners are Damon Rich and Jay Shin. And these two marvelous designers have an expertise in child-centric planning. And I unfortunately wasn't a part of that selection committee. I hadn't yet come on board with the city, but they were very much chosen for said expertise and for the team of like-minded individuals that they partnered with on that RFP. And so they began with the strategy that they've employed in other cities, namely Philadelphia. And I want to say it's Milliken or Milliker, something within them. But the planning process engaged around a park in Philadelphia was one of the selling documents that they, when I was on board, had put in front of me to say, this is what some of the tangible results of planning with kids look like. And I'll be honest, I had no idea what I was looking at. It looked like a collage map of disparate ideas. Hmm. And if I were to look at it today, it makes complete sense. And I think it's the idea that they've done a good job to hear every voice, specifically young people, and then to draw a map of how all of those voices can sing or play in harmony with one another. And I think, obviously, the city of Detroit is not Philadelphia. We have a great deal different needs and a different population. So our solution will look something different. And much more intelligible to the Detroit eye, but also to planners and developers and designers nationwide. I think what we're coming up with is something that actually can be replicated in any city with a youth population and an active youth body. And so that was one of the other elements that this plan was supported by. Previous planning efforts had already happened in our neighborhood, right? So I believe the Community Development Advocates of Detroit partnered with the Cody Rouge Community Action Alliance and other local organizations in the Cody Rouge and Warrendale neighborhoods to put together a first round, if you will, of planning recommendations.
And so
we built on top of that work, but also brought the child-centric portion to it.
Right. So prior to these planning efforts, what was the current state of that neighborhood in terms of the built environment? Are we talking like, how's the road network? Is it, you know, is it safe crossing?
Oh man, it was dark and void and the earth was without form and there were no school. I'm just joking. Yeah. This work by both, you know, other planning efforts as well as the work of some of our corporate partners has been going on for at least a decade. Mm-hmm. So, but I would say they weren't coordinated strategies.
Right.
And it's hard to be truthful with you to tell you what the impact of what that previous work looks like. Not to say it wasn't productive, but one housing strategy in a northwest corner of the neighborhood, and I'm making this completely up, mm-hmm. with an education program in a southeastern corner of the neighborhood weren't talking to each other. And so, you know, oftentimes I think what we've seen is people leaving the neighborhood to find resources that either don't exist in the neighborhood or weren't made available to them, or they weren't aware that those resources existed right there in their community. And so one of the first things was to just highlight what's here, you know, mm-hmm. and what's available to everybody. And are these things working? Are these programs working? And I think some of the previous work helped sift through that information to give us the cream of what it was that we started with.
So in terms of the built environment, is it the neighborhood, is it the kind of place, I'm just thinking about what you're trying to overcome for the current barriers to kids being able to navigate the neighborhood. So is it the kind of place where can you walk to get groceries? Is there like a central school?
Wow, it's funny that you
sidewalks are
walking
they
connected? Up. Wow, such yeah. an easy concept.
Such a planner. Yeah.
Yeah. Such a yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a really good question, and it's because one of the number one concerns that we heard during our community engagement strategy or time was people drive too darn fast. You know, and the streets aren't safe to walk around. Now, we actually had a group of 9 young people. We called them the Youth Council. Their other name or function was to investigate the neighborhood framework plan itself. So they could also be called the neighborhood framework investigators.
Okay. But
these 9 young people took to the streets to ask the difficult question of who makes decisions in our neighborhood. To city leaders like the mayor or former planning director Maurice Cox, et cetera, et cetera. They also, combined with Hector, canvassed the neighborhood to ask, you know, local residents what, you know, just having conversation about existing conditions. And by far, the number one piece of feedback that we got is that the streets aren't safe to walk around. Now, as far as physical infrastructure, there's a sidewalk on every block. Mm-hmm. There's paved streets on every block. For the most part, there are curb cuts where they're appropriate to have curb cuts and handicap access, etc. Those things exist, but on several of our commercial corridors, lanes are, you know, 13, 14, just too wide, which, yeah. as you know, as a planner, encourages people to drive faster.
You drive as fast as you feel you can drive.
Right, yeah. exactly. Or there's no parking. So, you know, people who are trying to patronize some of our commercial corridor businesses don't feel safe to shop there and therefore go to other locations. And so this car economy that we have doesn't sometimes lend itself to safe and, you know, friendly commercial streetscapes or residential living places. So, you know, one of the major recommendations that our plan has come up with is all sorts of street safety retrofits, everything from painted bump outs to narrowing traffic lanes to installing bike lanes with 3-foot buffers, two-way cycle tracks with 3-foot buffers, etc. In an effort to make the street a more walkable and friendly environment, primarily for young people. One of the most heartbreaking things I heard in this process was a young woman whose name I'll leave anonymous, but she was 17, getting ready to graduate high school. And in the course of doing this work, we interviewed several of them. And in her interview, she said that she had never crossed Joy Road. And she lives off of Joy Road. Mm. And I'm thinking to myself, wow. There's a street light. There's very little else, however, to help you cross that street. And I, as an adult, don't think about that.
Right.
You know, I just don't think about it. If I've got to get to the other side of the street, albeit I'm probably taking my life into my hands in the same manner as this young person is doing, if there's no painted crosswalk or stop sign to assist me. But I can't imagine what type of limitation that is on exploring my neighborhood. If
right.
I can't cross
it's
the
it's a complete barrier.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
You're stuck.
And it's an invisible barrier, but it's there nonetheless. And so, you know, that to me was like, man, you aren't able to access some of the fruit that this neighborhood has for the simple fact that we've made it too dangerous or we aren't mitigating the dangers of you crossing that street. And so that is one of the things that you will see come out as a recommendation of our planning process is first and foremost making the streets safer for people to live on, but also to cross and to experience as commercial patrons.
And then what about public spaces in the neighborhood? Were there places for kids to be able to hang out with each other?
Yep, there sure are. We actually have, it's a both ends answer for this as well. We both have in the Warrendale and Cody Rouge neighborhood a plethora of parks. We also, because of the size of the planning area, have what you and I would refer to as a park gap. And so, you know, we have the city's largest open space, which is Rouge Park, located at the westernmost border of the city and therefore of my planning study area, which is a 5 square mile planning study area, which is pretty large.
Yeah.
And so that's another story. But the open spaces, I will say, lack a bit of infrastructural element that would make them easier or more fun to engage, for lack of a better word, put it on a more regular basis.
Right.
And so we have your soccer field, we have your football field, and in some of them we have decent playground equipment. We actually just got two years ago, Kaboom playground equipment, which, you know, is fairly nice right near Cody High School. But there isn't much topographic change. Obviously, this is Detroit,
right.
So you know there isn't. We don't do mounds and things of that nature, mm-hmm. or even winding paths or bike routes or some of the other elements that allow for open space to not be heavy-handedly programmed, but
right.
to be more appealing for young people. And so that is an opportunity that we are responding to with some of the planned developments for 2021. Implementation on some of these things will begin in 2021. So that'll be to me, a nod to open space being programmed with youth in mind and with youth activity in mind, but as places that everybody would of all ages would be able to appreciate.
Okay. Let's nerd out on the planning process itself. What, how did it start? Who initiated it? Who'd you partner with? How did you reach out to the schools,
sure.
facilitation, all that?
Sure. So, I think this plan is both blessed and it's also burdened by how many people are involved.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the people part, you know, it's just a heavy coordination task and making sure that
a lot of all players are,
yeah, a lot of people yeah. CC'd and, you know, but the benefit of that is many hands on deck makes light work. And mm-hmm. so early on, the benefit of having several corporate and philanthropic parties already working in the neighborhood, as we talked about, made it easier for there to be an aligned interest around youth. Okay, boom. So that's in place. Now we hire, the city of Detroit hires, puts out an RFP and hires a Hector Design team and their sub-consultants. Boom. Now you've got experts in place. The formal planning process, I think, and I hope in most places, starts with just a general canvas of, well, who's already working or existing in this space and what do they have going on so that I might not reinvent the wheel.
Right.
And so our consultants did the lay of the land and began to put together their existing conditions analysis. Concurrently, my predecessor, and I'll name her Lindsay Barrett, who's actually currently now at the Skillman Foundation. So got a partner over there, got a friend over there. She was an intern on this project, and one of her early tasks was to make contact with all of the Detroit public schools, and there are 8 of them, in our planning study area to form a relationship and introduce that the planning department would be starting this year-long planning process and that we would want to come at multiple points to touch base with students and to inform them.
Positive response from them?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. So I started in my role in February of 2019. And at that time, the first set of engaging those 8 schools was just ending. And how we did that was with taking planning curriculum, like blank worksheets with some rudimentary information, such as one of those worksheets said, so tell me, what do you do each hour of the day? And so that's to give us an idea of the activities that young people were involved mm-hmm. in. Another worksheet was, you know, what are the six favorite things that you like to do and who do you do it with? Mm-hmm. And so again, building on activity, but also now starting to layer in who are the adults in the young person's life that we need to interact with,
right, and
where are these interactions occurring? And in another worksheet was draw a route from your house to your school.
Mm-hmm.
And on that route, we want to have an understanding of what the physical quality is. So if there are trees, if you walk past trees, draw me a little symbol for every time you see a tree and just use that same symbol. If there are potholes, right? Students in Detroit, Michigan are very aware of what a pothole is. So if you notice potholes on your route to school, tell us where those are. If there's an abandoned house, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're starting to get into more serious issues. If there's an abandoned house on your walk to school, or if you don't feel safe walking on a particular portion of your route on a street.
Yeah,
tell us about it and tell us why you don't like it. And so now we're starting to qualify and quantify real world physical infrastructure issues as identified by elementary school students or in some cases middle and high school students.
And how did you introduce this topic to the students? Like what did you say your purpose was? How did you get them to get excited? I mean, maybe they were just easily excitable, but how did you get them to engage in this process?
I'm youngish, you know, and I went to Detroit public schools. So, you know, I feel that on some level you have to have someone who, and even if I didn't have those credentials, someone who can relate, period.
Mm-hmm.
And that looks different in every township, municipality, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're doing a young people plan, don't send the senior citizen in there to, and no disrespect to senior citizens, but that's probably not the person that you want engaging 6-year-olds or 7-year-olds or, you know, the fifth graders. Probably not. And so with a bit of verve and energy and a genuine passion for what I do as a designer and as an urban planner, that part, I think, was kind of easy. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm excited to come tell you, you know, what I get to do every day is to help chart out and coordinate with other departments what the future of our city looks like, physically looks like. I'm trained as a landscape architect, so visually that's stimulating to me. You know, I want to see that change happen, and I hopefully, you know, unlike watching a tree grow, in an urban planning context, I can see some of those changes in my lifetime.
And actually see people interact with an environment.
Exactly.
That you
Some of my landscape plans, you know, I you know, God bless those saplings, but, you know, I won't get to see them in their mature state as we rendered it. But the teen center or the park development, right, that we plan and start, and you know, construction starts in 2020 or in 2021, those are changes that I get to drive past and appreciate on a more immediate sense. So in any case, that's easy for me personally to transfer. And I would, if I can speak for her, my counterpart, my former colleague, Lindsay, it, you know, for us as youngish people, was a very straightforward sense of passion to communicate. So that part you got a check mark on. The next part is, you know, at a very basic level, most kids don't know what planners do. Matter of fact, I'm a planner, and sometimes I'm scratching my
head. Well, that's why I was really excited when I was looking at the MAP conference bulletin, and I saw that you guys had done child-centric planning. It amazes me how many, you know, obviously elementary school kids aren't aware, but how many high school kids, and I didn't learn about planning until I was late in my college career.
I did not either. And it's okay, right? That's fine, because very quickly you start to appreciate planning takes a little bit from a lot of different professions.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, you could have not known what a planner is and still be good at planning, given the right tutelage and management around you and so forth.
But it's exciting that you're getting kids aware of what planning is before they're even... Yeah, you know, it's another career that they now
it
know
totally
about.
It totally is. Yeah. Matt, and to your point, Zach, we've had one or two young people express careers in planning and or to the design world as a result of having participated with our process. But let me get back to it. So we first, high level, we go into schools and we teach kids what is a plan, you know, and what is planning, and getting some very cursory high level data back from them. So everything is a data exchange. We're going to give you data and we want data from you, because that's how this thing is going to, you know, we're going to be able to be in tune with what reality is if we're always exchanging data. The next thing was we brought over 100 young people, and this is still in February of 2019, to a youth summit. And so we, in this scenario, we got out of the classroom into a communal space, and we asked them to mix up and partner with people you don't go to school with and who are not your age.
And did you do this in the summer? Did you do it?
This is February of 2019.
Okay.
So, again, at the precipice of our planning study. So we really started in earnest around that time. And a year later, we're looking to end, I'll say, early April.
Okay.
But just a little bit more than a year in totality. But what we asked these young people in these groups was to answer the question, what does Warrendale and Cody Rouge look like in the year 3000? So again, this is an imagine, like totally who can,
right. You know. Yeah.
So, and now you're coming up with all sorts of fanciful ideas, but, zombie rescue centers and flood zone elevated platforms where helicopters can land and or spaceships rather can land and take people to the other parts of the states. But now you're starting to think about, okay, now if a kid thinks this is a flood zone, that's rich information. They're aware that basement floods and regional, you know, that's a real thing in people's households. And now we're getting to some different level of what can a city do to address that type of a hydrological issue or an environmental issue. Not to say that this plan was specifically focused on that, but again, in the data exchange, we're learning what young people are aware of, and mm-hmm. we're learning how our plan in the future can address some of these concerns. Obviously, everything has to get right tested, and we're not planning based on the year 3000, but you know, again, a fanciful idea, a fanciful exercise just to get ideas and to get young people thinking imaginatively about what their neighborhood could look like. It's harder to think about change in a year. It's easy to think about change in 1,000 years.
Right.
So yeah. I don't know how that mathematical formula works, but it does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even the plan projects I do, I usually say like 50 years from now.
Yeah. It's easier.
In a year, they're like, well, next year I heard there's a Whole Foods going. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Think beyond that.
Yeah. Once Whole Foods fails, once Whole Foods goes away, then what? You know,
yeah, what else do you want to see?
What else? So that I think was a great start. So from then we started in earnest with the steering committee, and mm-hmm. I can share with you that not every plan, most all of them actually don't have steering committees.
Yeah, what was the importance of having a steering committee for this one?
There's so many people already working on things in this neighborhood that, to their credit, Hector and our planning department as well, thought it was really important for us to bring all of those different parties to the table together. Mm-hmm. So that as decisions were being made, nobody's work was taken for granted or forgotten about. And everybody's different initiatives could boil into, you know, a singular cohesive plan for the neighborhood.
How many people was the steering committee, and how did you decide? Because I imagine you have to draw the line somewhere. So how did you, just the people who seem to be the neighborhood leaders are most invested in, who would be most invested in the project and getting it done?
That part too, it's hard to judge who would be invested over the long term,
right,
from day one, right? People just schedules change and organizational
turnover
turnover and stuff like that happens. So we've actually experienced that several times over, right? People have organizational turnover and or just, you know, one entity in specific just stop showing up. And, you know, that you can't control, but it's a faith-based organization. And then when you find out, you know, we're setting meetings during faith night, you know, I'm not trying to come between anybody and God. So, so it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was really, to answer your question, an analysis of local leaders who had, already had some juice or some skin in the game and, was already working either in a nonprofit or a local development capacity to make things happen in Warrendale and Cody Rouge. And caveat, if they had anything to do with kids, we were definitely going to want to have a conversation, if not recruit them. Our steering committee wound up with 10 different organizations, some with multiple members representing the organization, others with just a single individual. Mm-hmm. But with different levels of capacity to execute initiatives that we would want them to carry. ultimately, the purpose of the steering committee is to inform residents who would then become ambassadors of this planning work. And so once the planning is done and implementation starts, you need and this is just if you didn't know, now you know, everybody in the planning world, you need a local steward. You need somebody who's going to advocate for that project to be successful.
Otherwise, it just collects dust.
It will collect dust, and people won't feel like it's for them. When in all actuality, the planning process is receiving feedback. What do you want, and how should it be, you know, and working within some reality, right? We don't have a budget for every fanciful wish that has been expressed. It's just,
right.
Sorry, but that doesn't, that's, we don't. Mm-hmm. And if you don't believe me, just Google a couple of years ago, we were in bankruptcy. So, you know, it's like, that we are able to do this work in at all is really a blessing and a marvel. And we're trying to make the most catalytic investments and layer onto said catalytic investments with subsequent investments, right, for the next 5 years. So what we do year one is hopefully going to be receptive of and attracting to future businesses to come into the area. And that's with every strategic neighborhood framework plan. We always want to make room for the next set of interested parties to come and be able to play and, you know, make equitable change happen in our city. So, well, in any case, we started with our steering committee and at the same time employed a youth council. And I've got to give credit to the Cody Rouge Community Action Alliance for having this body of young people, really knowledgeable young people. I think we started with 5 or 6 and recruited a few more, so we ended with 9.
All from different schools?
Yep, all of them from different, okay. Most of them from different schools and different parts of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But these young people, who again, I mentioned them earlier as our neighborhood framework investigators, they participate as steering committee members as well. They show up to each of our steering committee meetings, which are once a month, and they have a voice. They're an active part of our agenda. And in that way, we are being fully transparent about the goals of this plan being child-oriented, mm-hmm. child-centric, I should say.
Literally giving them power.
Literally giving them power. And it's the first time, I can't speak for every city in the world, but I want to go on record and say it's the first time a major city in the United States has done something like this. Mm-hmm. Now, there have been other efforts in the past, and you've seen attention paid to it by individuals in the 50s or so. Check out Wacker's a manual for Chicago, right? That was all about, we've got to make sure the next generation understands what municipality is all about so they can step into and steward that vision, that master plan vision into execution.
Probably more of that informative, educational role. You're educating them instead of actually giving them
That was the power. They're both education. This is just real world. You're doing it.
And right.
Getting on the job training kind
Higher
of
up on that Arnstein's ladder for people who are, we got to throw out the planning jargon
So that I think those processes started in earnest before we ever had a more formal public meeting. Now you get to, you know, the series of public meetings that all of our planning projects employ, and that's you have to have them,
right?
I mean, whether or not they're mandated is one thing. You need people in the area that you're planning in to know, you know, this is happening. And whether or not they are in support or love every idea you come up with is another thing. But, you know, you really need all hands on it. You can't get a vote if you don't know there's a vote.
You need people there who don't agree.
You need, yeah, you
that's
need,
what the planning
yeah, exactly.
Process
you
for
need
is.
All these people to know. So
yeah, you
got
to build
don't
the
plan
consensus
in the vacuum,
so that when you get to I mean, that's what planning is getting to a point where the implementation's easy because everyone's on the same page.
Ideally.
It only takes two people.
Ideally.
It only takes two people.
So we get to our first public meeting, and carrying on in novel fashion with what we're doing with our young people, they present it.
Oh, nice.
The young people presented to our community, this is what a neighborhood framework plan is. So they defined it. They defined the bounds. They defined who the steering committee agencies were and what we would be doing for the next year and give a couple months. So that to me was an eye-opening moment. Not that I did, obviously I coordinate, you know, working with our partners and our PDD firm, I was a part of the coordinating the event, but it wasn't until I actually saw the young people and heard the young people speak, I was like, oh, wow, that's what we're doing. You know, we are empowering young people. And that's when, you know, all sorts of light bulbs and things started to click for me as far as the impact of this work. So fast forward, we then, as a part of our process, employed focus group meetings. We called them public discussions, but I think that's kind of confusing with public meetings. So,
right.
I just to help people understand what those were about. Those are focus group discussions, and we employed our steering.
How many people?
Well, each steering committee member, part of their obligation, right? And again, in ambassadorship, we're asking you to take on elements of this plan, and so. And we stipend them, right? They're paid. These are paid organizations. And so they're paid to host things and
right.
You know, not in that, in a sense of an employeeship, more like we're going to cover your cost and make sure that there's a contribution to your organization as a result. But they host, each of them were asked to host two. And we broke them up into conversations, two-part conversations, housing and apartments, streets and getting around, parks and open spaces, and businesses and jobs. Those are the four buckets that our neighborhood framework strategy is out to find and identify and then execute buildable projects in. And so we asked people to come in and chime in on those four buckets with our steering committee members.
So you said two meetings for each of those?
Yep.
And was that with the same people, or did you switch
people
for the second group?
Good question. So let's think. We've got A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J organizations, right? Mm. So organization A is really interested in parks and open space and streets and getting around. And so they are going to host, and the majority of their conversation goes along the lines of those themes, of those topics. And they frame their conversation. We work with them, right? But this is their constituency. They're recruiting between 20 to 30 people to come and talk with them. And so obviously your reach is the people nearest to you. Mm-hmm. And so that needs to be a tailored conversation. And we work with them and make sure that they have the right data. But, you know, it's very much open for them to sort of lead that meeting.
Did you provide them with some facilitation techniques?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So, you know, the whiteboard and the yellow sticky notes.
No planner.
And, yeah, come on, man. Like, I don't know what planning meeting happens without those things. But and your big map, and, you know, and you're asking
markers.
Very pointed questions. Yeah. And, well, where is that? Where is that? Oh, is that a park here? Okay, you go to that. And so you start to, everything is a data exchange. And there's no wasted conversation. And really, again, I have to give credit to our consultants, Hector, for doing a great job of making sure to leave no piece of data uncovered. So we had all the sticky notes and all the poster boards and maps and printed. You know, we killed a lot of trees giving people information. But I would say it was effective, and we were super transparent. And honest about what we were hearing. And in that series of 20 conversation, you know, we had touch points with over 1,000, you know, I would say, let me back that number down, almost 1,000 people, in our four public meetings and all these 20 focus groups type meetings. You know, we touched over 1,000 people.
That's great to have. You said 36,000 for the whole area?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's really good.
I think so. I mean, the
it's hard to get 40 people to show up to a meeting most of the time.
It's really tough. I mean, these aren't,
I know what you mean.
You know,
not all at once.
Adding all of those, you know, different attendances together.
So,
and I think the number is a pretty good one. But to bookend, so we had a series of public meetings as potential projects emerge. We have an open house style meeting where we just lay it all on the table, and we bring the sub consultants and the consultants in, and they sit at these tables and they sketch ideas out right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Oh, cool.
And then we come back in another third public meeting and we show the more refined version of what all these things look like.
Like a feedback loop.
Yeah, it's a feedback
loop. Sort of a mini shrep process.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
And what we're gearing up for now is our fourth and final public meeting, where we will have at that point gotten approval from the mayor. Mm-hmm. We will have gotten approval from and the thumbs up from our steering committee organizations. We will have identified the departments that are going to spearhead these projects and take them through implementation. So some of them will have to go through their own round of community engagement, such as some of the parks that we have come up with, right? Like, mm-hmm. there will need to be another level of touching the community so that people are really aware of the specific amenity that is going to be built.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So the designs, were they for visioning purposes, or were they actually what you planned to build?
So at this phase in the planning process, you know, the consultants don't produce CDs, mm-hmm. not yet. Renderings are the most helpful tool we find to be able to communicate this is what it is and this is what it will be and could look like.
Right.
Obviously, the closer you get that rendering to reality, the easier the CD set is to build. But
The more pushback you get from people, right?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you yeah. rendered in a bike path, well, you had better give me a CD set with bike path in it. Yeah. But if you give this amorphous, non-clear, gray line, blurry edges sort of rendering, kind of get away with anything on a CD set.
Right.
So and I would like to give our mayor credit on, you know, really taking a good look at you know, these renderings and advocating for good design, you know. And I would also like to give our former planning director Maurice Cox credit for his emphasis on good design. And now our planning department is chock full of landscape architects, several just design oriented individuals who I think we hold a very high standard of, you know, what we expect from our consultants, and it shows. It mm-hmm. shows, I think, in some of the planning books that we've published.
And what were the designs focused on? How did the designs help with the child navigating the neighborhood, having places to play?
It is what do they look like? Impossible. So we, all right, great question, man. So we go back into these schools mm-hmm. and we ask them, so how do we do? You know, what's your feedback? I've done it with an in-progress rendering. Mm-hmm. I've done it with a photo, and I've done it with a 90% done rendering. Mm-hmm. Well, let me do that order differently so I didn't confuse anybody.
Right,
I've done it with just a photo, like this could be here, and it's an existing photo. Nothing is new about the environment. It just shows like we need a something there. Mm-hmm. Then I have had in-progress renderings. It's, you know, clear that somebody's working on doctoring this image, but it isn't all the way done. Then I've had the really, really beautiful, just about all the way done thing. And with no hesitation, I can say that final rendering, or that close to final rendering, we get oohs and ahs.
When you hit that PowerPoint slide and it goes before and after, and people are like, whoa.
Such a powerful device.
It's
such a
best.
Powerful device. Yeah. Now, it works better with young people than with adults because,
I've seen old people go crazy for it.
I've seen them go crazy unless it's an idea they just don't like.
Yeah, that's right. We don't want that here.
And then it feels like it's like, oh, man, like the dagger is in me because I've worked this hard and I'm speaking as if I'm the designer mm-hmm. rendering this, which coincidentally, I in my former life was a consultant uh-huh. to the city working at a different design firm. But, you know, it's like you work this hard on what you think is the right solution, and then in a public meeting, it only takes that yeah. one person, that one lady who just doesn't want to hear it. And she can start the tidal wave of everybody else taking a big dump on your hard work.
Yeah.
And, you know, as designers, we're sensitive about our stuff, right? Yeah. So imagine yourself, you just bust out this rendering, which you think is the solution. And, you know, renders take a little time.
Yep. Hours in Photoshop.
And then all of a sudden, you got to start from scratch on a different block with a whole different idea. It doesn't feel great, but ultimately, that's the iterative process at its finest, right?
Yeah, that's the purpose.
That's the purpose.
You need people that
you have to have that process, mm-hmm. and it makes the work perfect.
I actually get frustrated when I do planning processes and the people agree with everything. Because then I'm like, oh, you're not engaged.
I haven't had that pleasure of being frustrated.
give me some conflict.
I usually have a very, you know,
We work in a larger community.
My experience thus far, at least on this side of the table, as a consultant, maybe I didn't hear it as much, but as mm-hmm. the city, you know, I think I hear both sides, mm-hmm. you know, and ultimately it's a matter of, you know, how far can you make a dollar stretch, mm-hmm. and having to have that just that brutal truth to people, like, this is the best we can do, or this is what we have right now, and if we do this well, we will be able to do it again and do it better and do it closer to you or whatever. That's been the struggle of this job, mm-hmm. is for me, is having to just swallow that harsh pill that, man, you're not going to be able to provide the solution that everybody wants all the time.
Right.
And, you know, naturally you want to be a people pleaser. You want to make people, I don't wake up to make people mad or, right. you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe some people do. I don't, you know,
I don't many like, planets are like that.
Yeah. Right. Like, I wake up, like, how can I help? How can I serve today? What is the best thing I can come up with the resources that we've got? What's the best thing we could do with this?
Yeah. The designs that you did you do, like short-term quick design options, as well as some of the larger kind of pie in the sky, we're going to have to work towards this over years to get this designs? Or was it like tiered? Did you have three levels of
So difficulty? That's a great prompt, man. I would be remiss if I didn't highlight that we did have planning as a doing activity, right? So a lot of times we talk about plans, and for people who do know what planning is or are somewhat familiar, it looks like a public meeting, or it looks like this.
Looks like an episode of Parks and Recreation.
Yeah. Oh, man. And actually, my fiance literally. And I love that show. Well, she loves it. I happen to love it because she does.
I started loving it once I started doing this work.
But that show is hilarious. But it unfortunately has too many parallels to a planning office, not this one, but
local government in a small town,
in some Midwest. Other small town, but not here.
No.
But anyway, that jokes aside, the tiers were like this: what can we plan for that has local residents doing some of the work in the long term? Okay. What can we plan that obviously, like a street infrastructure project, will require city officials to lead that process, and there really isn't room for
right of ways thing. Yeah,
you can't have Johnny from down the block picking up a shovel when DPW comes. No, that's not how that works at all.
He's like, I'm building a bioswale,
but right,
like, you can't do that
sir. But there's plenty of opportunities, especially in a city with so much vacancy, and that vacancy has control over it. We've got steering committee organizations that own property, and so we identify pretty early on in the game what can we do to help activate some of the space that we just have, and either there aren't enough hands on deck to do something with it, or you don't have a plan because your business is focused on keeping the doors open, not on mm-hmm. developing property. So a community picnic table build one of the projects that we did over this summer. I'm going to tell you this story, and I'm going to tell you another fail. this story is a success. The other one is a learning lesson, though, and I think a good one for planners to know. What we did was we gathered. So sub-consultant to our team is Alex Gillum. His firm is called Public Workshop, and they're based in Philadelphia. And so we flew Alex in to plan the curriculum for and then host a community picnic table build. We asked our steering committee members, okay, guys, do you guys have property that you own? And if you do, or that you can manage and maintain, and if you do, let's submit those addresses and let's see how many places we can outfit with the picnic table. Because one of the other concerns we heard is people need place to gather.
Yeah.
People need safe place to
gather. I talk about a lot on this podcast, but one of the first interviews I did was with Cole Yoakum in Pontiac. He runs a nonprofit where he moved into what was at that time the most dangerous neighborhood in Pontiac and bought a house with his friends. And then Pontiac, similar to Detroit, a lot of kind of a hodgepodge of parcels that are, people living there, people not living there, people living there, people not living there. And they did the same thing and just activated those spaces like community gardens, picnic tables. And he basically said there was nowhere in the neighborhood for people to sit down and face each other.
Yeah. And I mean, oddly enough, that was the case here.
Yeah.
And so, and I mean, again, in a neighborhood where there are vacancies, there's been demolition, and so we have room, right? It just made sense to use that space in the interim while we figure out larger strategies right. to implement. And so we put 8 picnic tables on 5 different sites.
And how did that work? How did you find like somebody to come out and bring a hammer, and where'd you get the wood?
Great question. So that the wood we were able to fund through our planning budget. And okay. so this was all built into the scope of work that Hector Design Services provided us. If you're trying to do a child-centric plan, you should call these guys.
Okay.
Just at least call them, you know, because brilliant. Just actually MacArthur Award-winning geniuses, to be very specific about that brilliance. Just super thoughtful about their approach. And it's been a pleasure to work on this project with them. I've learned a lot as a designer. And so Alex basically coordinated the wood building, wood construction process by pre-cutting and painting all of the wood at a local workspace called the Brightmore Makerspace, which is in the Brightmore community of Detroit, which coincidentally is an outfit geared for a youth craft workshop. And so there's all sorts all sorts of tools and the right equipment you need to make a bench. But we did the construction with the community. So right, mm-hmm. he just did the pre-cuts and made it sort of modular so that you could quickly.
It's like IKEA.
It's like IKEA mm-hmm. sort of preparation. But the beautiful thing is, he made one, right? So he made one just to show you this is how it should look, and then there were no instructions. There were very neatly organized sets of tools and all of the nails that you would need.
That's
were
such
set aside.
A subtle psychological, like, get the neighbors to work together.
I wanted to quiz you, but you already answered it. Yeah, that's exactly what it teamwork, did. It forces people to have conversation and to, say, okay, well, I think it should go this way, or I think it should go this way. And what you get is natural consensus, right? Because there's mm-hmm. only one right answer. So, and ultimately, if you were starting to do it wrong, you'd be like, nah, you should probably back up a couple of steps. Take a look at this. There were hints, right? It wasn't like fight or flight or figure it out or you can't play. There was assistance. But that was a beautiful process of just showing how, and this is a hot day in June. We get warm weather in June, man, and it was not a cloud. There's unfortunately not very many street trees near the facility where we built this, so there was no shade. we did bring out tents to then actually have lunch on our picnic tables that we had recently built.
How'd you engage the neighbors?
Your typical email blasts. Yeah. We put out word through our steering committee organizations. Again, they are one of the key players in our advertising for what we're doing. And so not only do they tell people this is what the plan is, they say this is when the meeting is and come to it and voice your concerns or ideas. And so that worked perfectly. In each of our Department of Neighborhood, shout out to Mona Ali, who is my Department of Neighborhood manager. But she has she's got everybody's email address in my whole planning study area plus some. So, I give her my information to make sure that she puts the word out. And so we all just from a number of different positions play our role to recruit people to come. But we had a great turnout and we had food and all that good stuff.
Gotta have food.
Yeah. But that's I think that was the short term, to answer your question, that was the short term. What can planning do? What can we activate right now before mm-hmm. this plan is actually even finished that shows that we are responding to needs and concerns of people in a neighborhood with what meager things we have? The subtle thing that does is, if you can trust me with the small stuff, take a leap of faith on with me on the bigger thing. What I mean? Like I'm doing this to show you I hear you and I care about you and I love you and I want you to have the best thing possible. Like, I can't give you $1 million today, but I can give you this nice table.
Right.
And, and use that table to sit at with you and have continued conversations as we plan and plot for what that $1 million or whatever it is spend looks like. Right. So, and we're not going anywhere.
Plus, it keeps them engaged. So I'm sure there are so many communities where the planner comes in, does a great plan, and then unfortunately, in a realistic world, it takes 10 years to secure the funding and get the parcels all together. Yeah, I mean, it just takes a long time.
It takes too long.
And so it was good that you guys were doing these short-term things during that.
Totally.
So
man, one of the worst pieces of feedback I got, and this is a learning lesson, but one of the worst pieces of feedback I got was that our planning, and this is from an elderly woman, she said that, basically, by the time you're done with this, I'll be dead, is what she said in a public meeting. And again, that was difficult because, you know, I had to think about, well, what are we offering? You know, what are we offering? I know we labeled this a child-centric plan, and, you know, to our credit, the amenities are for everyone, right?
Right.
Not just kids. But still, we're doing something, we're off if we can't answer her question about what she can get in her lifetime from our planning efforts. That there should be a really easy and digestible answer. And I just,
she's like, why am I here right now?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly. Why is and at my that time, time I just did not have it. And so, and obviously the answer isn't, well, we put you some picnic tables, so, you know, there's, and now fortunately, you know, in the months that have passed since then, we've gone back to the drawing table, and have some, think better answers for her. But the other learning lesson I wanted to tell you about
was the fail.
Yeah. So we had this successful planning and doing in community picnic table organization, but we had internships also over the summer. And on one internship track, we had young people basically doing their own version of a planning process, which was novel, and there were some takeaways that were positive. The other, which we really had high hopes for, was the ability for young people to answer the question of, well, what resource can we build that answers an immediate need in our community? And so that would have ranged from all sorts of things, such as temporary bus stops to temporary playgrounds to a temporary, you know, spoken word stage in a park or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. Slightly substantial substantial building projects for young people to have taken on. Problem: Michigan labor laws. So if you're not getting an apprenticeship certificate or some sort of accreditation for it, we can't pay minors to do work with power tools.
Okay.
So that, like, it just wasn't.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah, who knew? You know what I'm saying? And it's also kind of like,
and then after you hear it, you're like, that makes sense.
It makes sense, right? Child labor laws, you know, that makes sense on one hand. Mm-hmm. On the other hand,
do you want to teach kids how to do things?
Precisely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this is very much a supervised, you know, environment with a curriculum. And the whole idea is teaching making. How to teach people, young people specifically, the confidence to approach a buildable solution to their environment.
Yeah, and all the benefits that come from that, and taking pride in seeing what you've done. It's like,
preach, man, preach. I'm in the Vega choir right now. Okay. Come on, say something. So I can say yes. No, but you know, and so that was a bit of a blow. And so where we thought we would have been able to do projects that could live in the environment in the neighborhood for people to drive by, walk by, see, touch, interact with, but then also to be like, oh, again, to the nod of the community picnic table, something bigger is coming. Mm-hmm. Or let's go with the example of a temporary bus shelter, right? Mm-hmm. Had we have gotten that idea some legs and the ability to get off the ground a little bit, new DDOT bus shelters are coming, and in the meantime, the city is nodding to say we are receptive of this sort of a short-term temporary solution. And we did it with young people. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the takeaway from that is, but I've got to think that that would make people proud. Sincere hope. I think there are also some who, you know, if there isn't a nod to the proper oversight, or that it wasn't built to some level of security or stability, right? Then you have your naysayers who are like, I don't want to sell on that because, you know, some young person, but it might fall. Right. But to that person, I would say, roll around your neighborhood and look how many benches are at bus shelters.
Right.
Right. Or bus stops, because they aren't shelters. Look at how many wooden benches are there. Young people help build those.
Mm-hmm.
And they built them because they didn't have anywhere to sit when they're going to school. So what you got for that? what do you have for that? Did you build something? Did you help make your block better? Because these kids did.
Right.
Now, let's fight. Let's debate.
Have you seen seen the adults in the neighborhood become more engaged because they see that the kids
Absolutely.
Sure you got parents showing up.
Well, start with the parents, right? The parents, you know, shake our hand and look us in the eye, and that is a measure of accountability, right? Yeah. One young woman's father, who I won't name, but one young woman's father shakes my hand and, you know, looks me in the eye, and that to me is that, you know, he's entrusting me with his child for the hours that we get her on this planning process. And you want to do a good job. You want to do a good job so that the next time, you know, he's like, oh, wow, thanks for what you guys are doing with my, you know. And so I'm speaking to you as Matt Williams. I am a city employee, but I'm not speaking to you as a city employee. I hope that, you know, we could splice that somewhere into the beginning of this, because it's really important, you know. I just have to make that distinction. But at the same time, I have to say it's such a privilege. Mm-hmm. It's such a privilege to have that feedback loop with the parents. Then you go to the teachers, right? So we go into our Detroit public schools, and you have teachers who, you know, we're doing a service by showing our support for their education curriculum. And sometimes it's in tandem with what they just taught. Most times it ain't. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, you know, we're in their class, and we brought our own worksheets, and we brought our own, you know, stuff, and we have a very interactive, that makes their day go better. Mm-hmm. And they start filling out the worksheets with their students, and they stay after when their students leave class, and they're like, well, let me tell you what I think about this. So, yes, it's this super huge, because if a kid gets into it, of course the adults are going to get into it, because they've mm-hmm. got to pay attention to what the young people are doing. Mm-hmm. If you're not paying attention to what the young people are doing, you're slipping. So, you know, it's this balloon effect. That by getting them engaged with something that's tangible that they can sink their teeth into and that they want to come back to do tomorrow, of course we get older people. we get adult participation as a result, and that to me is organic. And it feels like we have better and more rich conversations as a result.
Yeah. All right, we're about that hour mark. You want to wrap it up?
Sure. So I'll wrap it up with this.
Yeah, give us all the information, whatever you were about to say, about where people can find out about all this.
Sure. So our, logistically speaking, our website is CodyRougeandWarrendalePlan.org. You can also find information on the City of Detroit's website, cityofdetroit.mi.gov, and throw in Warrendale Cody Rouge into the search menu, and it'll take you right to us. But I guess, you know, in speaking again, this is speaking as Matt Williams, and my views and opinions are my own, but I am in support of what our planning department and this administration is doing to address neighborhood needs and concerns. And I'm very grateful and feel like I'm poised at the right time in my own life to be managing this project. It's almost like in order to be able to teach someone, you got to know it for yourself. And in the process of working with so many young people and explaining what it is I do as a designer or as a planner, or why these processes exist the way they do, or inviting the young people into the city to participate in steering committee meetings with us, I'm a bit more clear about what my life's direction is as a result of doing and engaging in this work. And, you know, I think it makes the work of the planning department, not that it was dishonest, but that much more honest. And I would encourage as many municipalities as have the capacity to do so to engage young people early and often in your planning processes. And to the degree that you can, pay them. Pay them so that they see it as
or at least
real,
have some food there,
or at least a hot slice of pizza. Yeah. But in some way or form, make sure that the process is not lip service, but that they're given a true voice at the table. Mm-hmm. And albeit my plan isn't all the way done yet. Again, we're at that, you know, just about final meeting and just before mayoral approval process. But I promise you, the plan in and of itself will have that much more life to it and vibrancy to it. And it becomes more than just a document that lives on the shelf.
It's already more than that.
It's already more than that, right? It becomes a life-changing moment for young people who then grow up with an appreciation of their municipality, of their local government, and become more active citizens early on.
Yeah,
that's what it's about, like bringing everybody up, elevating everybody. One of the I love this about this administration is equitable change for, and I'm messing up the vision, but it's, you know, a healthy transformational change that involves everybody, inclusionary change, and it's so beautiful to see that playing out in the lives of young people. I couldn't be more tickled to get up to come to work to see that process play itself out. Yeah,
and you're planning in Detroit in such an amazing time for the city to go from bankruptcy to what it's at right now.
We got money, baby! I'm just joking.
Well, you know, I've been coming down. I'm from Saginaw. I came down to Detroit all the time in high school and things like that for concerts. And it's like the first time where I was like, in the last few years, where it's like, wow, this city is making it's incredible how much change is happening, positive change.
Totally agree.
And I'm glad to see that it's getting out to the neighborhoods now. That's amazing.
Yeah, so needed. I mean, downtown is going to right size itself. You know, it's gonna be okay. And matter of fact, we're about to have some pretty huge buildings up in the next few years.
Yeah, I spent maybe 3 hours yesterday just walking around.
Yeah,
because every time I come down here,
you see that new Hudson site. Yeah, that's about to be huge. You know, and then the U of M building going on. So it, like, and the train station is coming back online. We've got projects, man. Like, it's popping. Like, this is the time to be in Detroit. If you're a developer or a planner or a designer, it's a good time.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very pivotal moment in the life of many a young people in this city who I think they're poised to stay or leave. And it's up to us to include them in as much as we do so that they make the choice to stay. And if they do leave, come on back home with that big body of knowledge you just got and make us all better for it.
Right.
And that's my 2 cents.
All right. Great. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it, Zach.
Yeah, this is great. That was fun. Welcome To is brought to you by the Land Information Access Association. For more information about what we do, go to liaa.org. Music for this podcast was provided by Blue Dot Sessions. Talk to you guys next time.